Welcome to the inaugural Storage Review podcast. Glad you've decided to listen to what we have to say today. The Storage Review podcast, it's a new effort. As I said, it's the inaugural. We've never done one before. And what we're trying to do is capture some of the conversations that we have with end users, storage vendors, and others in the space that tend to be great conversations but never find their way onto our website in any sort of meaningful way. We often have events where we go to the vendors and talk to them over lunch or in private meetings or over drinks. Those are the best kind. You get to learn all sorts of new things there. And we get smarter. We learn a lot, but often fail to translate that into content on the site. So we wanted to come up with a different take on that with the podcast to give our readership and our fledgling listenership a new way to engage with us and with the industry at large. We're going to talk to industry leaders from vendors. We're going to speak with end users that are doing neat things with storage and enterprise IT in general. And we're going to really try to have a different take on the industry and dive into the things that you guys care about. To that end, always make sure to hit us up on Twitter at Storage Review or use the contact form on storagereview.com. Let us know what you want us to focus on. And before we have a podcast, we'll seed it out to Twitter and ask for questions. We got some great user questions this week. We integrated those into the podcast, and we want to make this thing better. So give us your input. Help us out. This week's podcast is with Lee Caswell from NetApp. Fresh off of NetApp Insight, we recorded this with Lee and really dive into a lot of the positioning that NetApp has around the cloud, what they're doing with their flash strategy, and how they view the world post-Dell EMC merger announcement. We'll dive into all of that and much, much more. So Lee Caswell joins us from NetApp to give us an update hot off their NetApp Insight event and all sorts of other goings-on. Lee, what is it that you do at NetApp for the guys that don't know you?
Yeah, hi, thanks, and thanks for having me here. I'm the Vice President of what's called Product and Solutions Services Marketing. And what that effectively is, you know, how do we position and talk about the value of our products to customers and partners? And particularly, you know, we've been, as you know, spending a lot of time helping customers and partners understand our view of the world and what we call the data fabric.
Okay, that's great. Now, you talked about a lot of storage stuff, but if I look at your Twitter profile, it says something more along the lines of table tennis and classical trumpeter. I don't hear you mention that in your job description.
Funny how that doesn't show up immediately. Yes.
So you are a table tennis wizard. Can we set that fact straight?
I think if you want to come over, we have a table in Building 8 here, and I'm enthusiastic about any match for sure.
You'll take any comers. Well, you know, thankfully I don't have to feel your wrath in Cincinnati here, and I'll practice up before I shoot out.
There you go.
So I mentioned Insight. You joined NetApp, I think, right before Insight last year. You and I worked together a little bit at Fusion.io and SanDisk. How was that event for you this year, and what sort of trends were you hearing from your customers year over year at Insight?
Yeah, really interesting. Yeah, I joined 1 year ago, actually. So you're right, just before Insight. And I think if you look from last year to this year, we had put out this vision of the data fabric as effectively the idea that you want to be thinking about what's happening in clouds in general, but you also want to be thinking about what's happening in flash, right, and in storage. And this market is moving really fast. And so we talked about this idea of how the value over time is going to shift from just storage and data protection into data management. And you know, over this year, what was exciting for me, right, is to see just how much progress we made. You know, on the product side, we brought the all-flash FAS out, you know, fastest growing product in the history of NetApp. We introduced for the first time with our AltaVault product, right, is the idea that you could have snapshots and clones natively sent to another device and, you know, take advantage of storage efficiencies over the WAN into S3, for example, right? And even on things like Cloud ONTAP, which is our version of our you know, classic data management running in an Amazon cloud, you know, we showed that you know, we'd increased increased the capacity there and introduced encryption. And so for a lot of customers, I think those elements were really like, we've invested on the product side to make this data fabric vision become a reality. And so to see that level of progress in a year, I mean, it's really exciting. And you could, I think you could tell from the audience of the show.
Yeah, it's always interesting to me. We were talking before, I go to a lot of these tech events, and afterwards we get a lot of questions from people on our site or people over Twitter or email. You know, what did you guys think about so-and-so event? What was the theme? And when I answer that question about Insight, you know, clearly this year's theme was about bringing together that cloud story more than anything else. I mean, you have products. There were products on the expo floor, but the cohesive conversation around what the cloud means in the enterprise, what data portability means in the enterprise, those messages hit home pretty hard. When you're talking to your customers about the NetApp cloud focus and vision, that's got to be a pretty big deal to them, because, you know, although the popular narrative is that a lot of enterprises went to the cloud, felt like it was expensive or unreliable and came back, and now they're trying this hybrid thing. That may be true, but there's still a lot that haven't tried cloud at all. Is that what you guys are finding as well, as they try to understand what the options are?
Yeah, I think, you know, what's happening is a lot of customers are hearing about the cloud, and in part they're hearing from cloud providers, right? And especially, you know, big, large public clouds like Amazon and Google and others. And, you know, if you listen to that narrative, it sounds like, well, the public cloud is the destination. And this whole idea of like private, you know, a hybrid model where I've got some on-prem, some customer owned, some, you know, how this is going to manage. And that hybrid thing is just kind of a, you know, a, let's call it a unfortunate middle ground, right? Step along the way. Where, you know, we believe exactly the opposite is true, is that there are customers who are trying out things in the public cloud, and, you know, even customers where you say, you know, are you doing something in the cloud? And they say, well, no. And you say, well, really, are you on Office 365? And they say, oh, well, yeah, we're doing that. But, you know, or are you using Salesforce? Well, yeah, you know. So, you know, there are a lot of things where, you know, you'd say, well, there is a lot of, you know, experimentation and running actual workloads in the cloud today. And that at the same time, when you talk to enterprise storage, you know, buyers, consumers, and partners, you know, they're like, they look at the cloud and they're like, well, public cloud, that's not anywhere close to what I'm thinking about for my enterprise level data. Like, that's not, and so tell me about that data fabric again, because if what you're telling me is like, I'm going to end up in the public cloud, like, I don't believe that. So the next step is really, I think, kind of the fun one, which says, hey, you know, there's going to be public cloud activities, workloads, and things. And what the data fabric says is that, or, you know, professes to show value, is that we're going to help you manage data no matter where it resides. And you get to choose on your time frames. You know, we think that there will be stuff in the public cloud, but also that storage is inherently different because it has state, you know, because it is the only thing that you can't just spin down storage. You have to go and protect it and back it up. All those things mean that, you know, where storage lives is extremely important in how I manage it over time. And so that's why the, you know, what we view is that the hybrid cloud that says that I'll have some of my own gear, some of my own storage, some will be out in the cloud. I'm going to be moving data around, or I'm just going to be accessing community. All of these elements have to do with data management, and that's where the data fabric really shows that, you know, we're able to do that across platforms, across clouds, even inside of a single enterprise on-prem.
Yeah, I mean, that I think that was a that came through in a lot of the conversations that I heard at Insight. When you talk about cloud, just help me out with how you think about the segmentation, because a lot of what you're talking about there are large enterprise cloud solutions, and that makes a lot of sense. As you go down to SME, SMB, obviously a lot of those guys are consuming cloud services or something as a service. But do you think that cloud applies to those guys too, or is this just a big business problem?
Well, I think if you think about it, where the cloud applies, you know, throughout the stack, I think, and throughout the customer base, when the way I look at it is that I think of a cloud user as thinking, well, what is the number one reason why I'm going to the cloud? Like, what's the customer? And, you know, what it tends to be is it's not cost, but it's flexibility. How do I go and get the flexibility? And the example I use here is that, remember when, you know, Gmail introduced the 1 gigabyte mailbox. And if you talk to IT professionals, everyone says, oh yeah. And the reason they recognize that is that whether or not they were using Gmail, every one of their customers or users was coming back in to say, hey, look at what I can get in the cloud. Can I do that with our internal system? And if not, why not? Right. So the flexibility that all of a sudden, you know, you start to see in the cloud becomes kind of the litmus test or the standard, right, by which you say, hey, I need my infrastructure to be more cloud-like. I want that infrastructure to be flexible and dynamic. I want it to be, you know, up 100% of the time, non-disruptive or continuous availability. And so we think in part, even for customers who have no intention of going in outside of just a data center environment, what's happening in the cloud is basically showing that there are some new ways to think about how flexible infrastructure can be. And we think that's a really interesting driver and supporting value proposition for the data fabric.
So you talk about the flexibility and we talked a little bit about some of the hardware solutions and some of those that are enabling the cloud solutions too, right? But one of those consumable bits is FlexPod, of course, where you guys talked about a lot of great success there with Cisco and your other partners. That's been a really great product for you guys, and that came out well before a lot of this momentum around converged infrastructure was taking place. Give us a quick update on FlexPod and how that's changing with the market demands around the hyperconverged story.
You know, the converged space right now is one of the fastest growing segments in enterprise infrastructure, certainly growing faster than the overall market. And one of the reasons why is, you know, it solves the number one issue we have, which is limited IT skills. If you look at how we're taking with our partner Cisco here and pulling together storage, networking, compute into a jointly simply configured system as well as simply and jointly supported system, the opportunities that we have for making sure that infrastructure, you spend your time on the things that really matter as opposed to just trying to integrate things in a... So some of the things that we've been doing most recently that I'm particularly excited about is we announced the integration of our all-flash FAS, that would be our flash-based product, into a Cisco validated design or CVD, along with support from Cisco for what we call ACI, or the software-defined networking component of Cisco. So now you've got a stack that's effectively software-defined all the way from flash into disk, and then investment-protected into the cloud. And so the idea that I've got all of this together means that now I've got a simple way to go and still scale servers and storage independently, which gives you the flexibility to go and be the most cost-effective over time. So that's one element. A second piece that, you know, is particularly this week with the OpenStack conference in Tokyo, we released a Cisco validated design where we're showing how to deploy OpenStack. And, you know, we have contributed, been a lead contributor, in fact, to the Manila release, although we also have support for Swift and Cinder. And so what you find there is OpenStack as a, you know, think of this as the flexibility of the cloud with open source economics. And so, you know, what we're finding is that, you know, for customers that are looking, thinking, hey, I'm going to use these cloud-like resources all of the time, now I start thinking, well, maybe if I can go and this is a build, you know, build versus rent model. I can go and build this out with OpenStack, and OpenStack, of course, is an open source initiative. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of new distributions. What we're doing together with Cisco is stripping out all the risk that this will work in the field and be supportable. And that's effectively a converged infrastructure. You know, we think that's going to be just a really interesting intersection for us to show customers how to go and deploy new models really simply with our joint support.
You know, it's interesting to me about FlexPod. I know you've sold 5,600 of these things, and it's going really well for you. A lot of people we talk to, customers, still view FlexPod as a larger scale solution, and it certainly is consumable in smaller bits. What are you guys doing with FlexPod for remote office, branch office, or at the edge generally to look at smaller use case deployments for FlexPod?
Yeah, really good point. Now, you know, I think it is true that you know, customers have looked and said, "Hey, this thing can scale up." But now we're also working with Cisco and bringing new platforms that help you scale down. And you know, the scaling down element with like FlexPod Express, for example, is one of the reasons why, you know, FlexPod just passed $5.6 billion in revenue, over 1,100 partners supporting this across 100 geographies. And in part, the ability to move and scale down means now that I can deploy in smaller configurations. And those branch offices, in many cases, what you're looking at is even more concern or anxiety about the amount of IT expertise I have and how do I support this. And so, yeah, we're definitely taking this downstream to make sure that for back office operations, I've got a simple, unified solution. One other thing I might add, though, and this is, I think, changing with the introduction of Flash, is that in the past, we had kind of separate SAN work, you know, systems that were running performance workloads, and then NAS systems like, you know, what NetApp has historically provided that were being used for tier two workloads and large files. And now we're seeing that Flash really changes the game here, where with Flash, I can run performance workloads at best of class industry performance speeds, backed up by SPC1 benchmarks, for example. And so now I can start thinking, gosh, I don't need separate SAN and a separate like NAS tier two storage system. With FlexPod, you know, and FlexPod Express, I've got the ability now to go and run all my applications, support all of the performance workloads, and use Flash as a way to minimize the operational costs of how I go and manage and spend my time kind of micro-tuning performance. Now I've got a way where I get all the manageability. This is where NetApp writers really helped, I think, the industry overall. We have a long history of making storage just easier to use overall, and this new unified with Flash is really a simple way to go and make that happen.
You know, it's interesting. That message is certainly one that we're hearing too, that as you add more Flash to systems, be it all Flash or a hybrid that has really good Flash tiering or caching capabilities, that all of a sudden it frees up the storage to do more, to not be the bottleneck. And this app consolidation seems like a pretty real thing, where before Flash may have started with some high-performance databases or some mission-critical workloads, you know, maybe a silo off to the side for a VDI deployment. But it sounds like we could be approaching a time where more and more of that is coming together on primary storage in the standard stack. It sounds like that's what you guys are driving towards as well, then.
I certainly think that's true. You know, the first wave of Flash adoption, and certainly I saw this at Fusion.io, right, was just on performance. Gosh, find an app, and you can show that with Flash, it's not only faster, but because of the amount of performance in a Flash device versus a disk drive, it's actually cheaper, right? So if you can find a performance workload, that's where Flash was deployed first, where, you know, in our industry, things that are faster and cheaper tend to move really fast,
right?
And, you know, if it's not faster and cheaper, I mean, InfiniBand would be a good example of something that's faster but more expensive. And those become more niche technologies. You know, Flash just you know, by its nature would be is faster and cheaper. And so that's where you saw this kind of first wave of adoption. Certainly, we've got a lot of emphasis with Cisco, and then, you know, for partners that just want to take SQL, Oracle, SAP workloads, right, databases historically, but also serverless environments and run them more, you know, more aggressively. We got a great opportunity for that and the performance. But now what's happening, and I think this is interesting and directly tied to price point, is would I pay a premium for Flash if I can start getting the management benefits of not having to manage performance across just mixed workloads? That's the next wave of adoption. And so we've done some things here to go and strip out the risk for customers. First, you know, we announced a 3x performance guarantee. And, you know, the guarantee is says, you know, you'll get three times the performance for SQL or Oracle workloads. And we're using that as a way to go and say, you know, it's at least 3x. You know, it's probably going to be better. In fact, our technical guys thought, you know, yeah, really.
That's a legal number if I've ever heard one.
They said 3x. I mean, come on, you should be able to get 5, 10, 15, 20 times, right? And in fact, that's what our, you know, that's what all of our technical reference diagrams are, you know, show that you can get 20 times faster transactions per second for SQL moving from disk to flash. But the idea was to just show that, hey, there's a real simple way to go and make sure, and it's backed up by 2 days of professional services, not to eke out the last bit of performance, but to show that you're going to get this level of performance unless you've configured something wrong, and we'll help you figure that out. Now we move into this management, you know, model where, you know, if I could pay a slight premium, maybe I use Flash and, you know, I start tapping into the other benefits of Flash, which are, hey, guess what? I'm saving on power. I'm consolidating space. I don't have to go and worry about managing the reliability of, you know, drives that that fail. And all of a sudden, I've got a whole set of other benefits. And I think that's where, you know, on pricing, we're going to see that this is a very interesting model for companies like NetApp that have the scale in order to bring Flash at very cost-effective prices.
I want to keep talking about Flash. Let's take a quick break and get a word in from our podcast sponsor and then pick it back up again and dive deeper into the NetApp perspective on Flash.
Sounds great.
NVMe is built for today's faster and more robust solid-state drives and is designed to take full advantage of all the bandwidth, random access, and latency benefits that SSD technology offers. OCZ's new ZDrive 6000 series represents a complete dual-ported solid-state storage solution that has the potential to save enterprise customers money by minimizing storage over-provisioning, as well as the associated overhead. Deploying high-performance ZDrive 6000 SSDs in servers that support NVMe U.2 interface enables companies to cost-effectively use hyper-converged systems and hybrid cloud-based applications, providing scalability without having to build out expensive storage infrastructures, all of which amounts to a massive improvement in storage performance and total cost of ownership across a wide spectrum of applications. To learn more about the ZDrive 6000, go to OCZEnterprise.com. All right, well, we're chatting here with Lee Caswell from NetApp, and right before the break, we were talking about Flash solutions. You've talked a lot about all-flash FAS as being an enabler and FlexPod as being part of the cloud solution and other types of things. You also have the EF series with Flash, too. Just for those that may not know NetApp's portfolio all the way through, talk about that and where else Flash has an impact on the NetApp portfolio.
Yeah, it's a really nice point. Now, you know, we think of the AFF and the all-flash FAS as enterprise-grade infrastructure. And you know, what that means is you've got, from an infrastructure standpoint, all of the storage services that you'd expect around, you know, disk, let's say, right? Anything integrated data protection, replication, compression, deduplication, bin provisioning. I mean, the list just goes on and on of all of the rich features that we've got in the all-flash FAS product. But, you know, the EF product, which is, you know, the all-flash version of our E-series line, is actually a distinguished product in its own right, because with that product, while you don't have the services, we call this an enterprise-grade storage building block, because what you're doing in this case is you're partnering that up with software in order to get these services. And, you know, the benefit of that is that we have an extremely clean data path. You know, architecturally, if you look at E-Series, it's not doing other things. It's not doing compression. It's not doing dedupe. It's not generally doing replication or snapshots. And so as a result, what you get is an architecture that is extremely efficient on delivering consistent low latency response times. And for flash and for performance buyers, in some cases just bare metal application DBAs who are looking for the ultimate low latency response times, I mean, we have just stunning results with the EF. 4K block reads, admittedly one of the easiest workloads, but you know, looking at 180 microsecond response times backed up by SPC1 benchmarks, these are terrific, consistent low latency response times, which are highly valued by DBAs and application owners who largely are putting storage services then onto the application host providers, right? So they don't need these services in the array. And in fact, what they value in the array is the fact that you're going to get this very consistent response time performance. And so the market, you know, breaks into these two modes where for customers where there's a latency spec and they want to see very consistent performance, the EF product is in an ideal building block. Whereas for customers that are looking for, you know, world-class performance still, but all of the services that come along with that, the AFF provides, you know, a distinctly rich set of features for that customer base.
Okay. Well, that's helpful, and I think that clarifies the picture for those that might not know all that NetApp has to offer. Now, the one that we didn't talk about that I got to ask you about is FlashRay. At Insight last year, the Mars movement was still a big deal. It was out on the show floor, and there was a lot of discussion around this new technology. If I'm guessing, and this predates your relationship at NetApp, but if I were guessing, I would say that's one that NetApp marketing would like to have back in terms of the outward communication of what Mars was going to be and what FlashRay was going to be. You know, talking to the guys on the show floor this year, it sounds like the initiative is still a very real thing and that they're trying to take some of those features into the more mainstream product line. You know, why don't you give us an update there on what's going on?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you look at I think the company basically felt an obligation to go talk about what we were looking at in the flash market. And, you know, from a marketing standpoint, you know, talking about a product that you can't sell is off, or you're not ready to sell yet, can be hard because you're kind of, I would say, towing the line between sharing new information that would be of interest to customers, but then also, you know, there's a responsibility, I think, of saying, what do I do with this information? You know, how do I act on it? We learned some really important things from the early feedback that we got on the early draft of the Mars code. We are using Mars and will be using the Mars operating system as an only flash system. I think that's important to distinguish. You know, with only flash, that means that you can obviously, you can bring down the, you can actually make the product slightly simpler because it's just simply doing less things. And it also gives us the opportunity to drive to a lower cost basis. And we think that's going to be important over time, right? That this is going to be in a highly competitive market. And so we think FlashRay will give us an opportunity to bring prices down. However, FlashRay, like any new, you know, only flash architecture, doesn't have the rich set of storage services, right, that our all-flash FAS product has. And so, you know, I think as we look and say, you know, bringing the cost down, taking some simplicity, and basically using the product to drive a high-velocity sale, you know, opens up even a more incremental market opportunity for NetApp. But, you know, there's no obligation for us to go and share all of the details, including the timing right now. But stay tuned as we're as excited as ever about the prospect that FlashRay opens for us to expand the market for flash and at the same time leverage all of the data management capabilities that we have, including tie into the data fabric. And so, you know, stay tuned on that. you know, we're in part just moving forward with our AFF and EF products with channel partners. They're extremely successful in the market. We are growing faster than the market. And, you know, stay tuned for us to get even more competitive over time with FlashRay.
Yeah, just one more thought on this topic and we'll go on. But the industry is facing a lot of changes. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on Dell and EMC. There's so much we don't know and won't know for many months there. But clearly, objectively, they've got several product lines in the storage portfolio that are going to either consolidate or something. NetApp has done well with the ONTAP stack to stay consistent and have a dedicated code base throughout the storage portfolio, more or less. Does segmenting out FlashRay on Mars concern you at all, or what is NetApp doing to make sure that that doesn't become a pure silo play and get too far away from the core business from a capabilities management and integration standpoint?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, what you'll see from us is that you know, every one of our products is being tied into the data fabric. If you take the EF product, for example, right, we partner that up with StorageGRID WebScale. That's our object-based solution, for example, so that you can go and deploy into any S3 compatible cloud. There's a tie-in to how users might want to go and access into the cloud. And we'll have similar links for FlashRay, just like we do with AFF, to make sure that there's a flash to disk to cloud data management component of that. And so, yeah, I think, you know, what you've seen in the industry overall, right, is that NetApp has invested to make sure that there's a common management structure. Some people thought that was just CDOT, but in fact, it's the data fabric. And that data fabric says I can manage data across wherever it resides, independent of the hardware that it's on. So I could run on proprietary hardware, I could run on server white box, I could run on a cloud environment with Docker now support, I could go and, you know, move across clouds. So we're liberating data from the underlying hardware. And so you'll see that as a theme across our products. And that common management, we think, is the reason why NetApp is in a time of increasing uncertainty where, yeah, Dell and EMC are slamming together, but HP is splitting apart, right? There's a lot of uncertainty in the marketplace today. And so the ability to go manage flash, disk, cloud, blocks, files, all of this, you know, from a primary to secondary storage, with a common UI across hardware platform, we think that's the platform to consolidate on as you look at how you're going to be competitive and, you know, looking forward over the next, you know, 7 to 10 years.
Now you said CDOT for the uninitiated.
So we call that cluster data on tap. And so that's basically cluster data on tap is the element of our product now that allows you to scale out as well as up. And so scaling out gives you all of the flexibility of having multiple controllers, different I/O patterns, so disk, flash, cloud, as well as non-disruptive operations. And that's a really important one, is that, you know, you can change any of the elements of our cluster data on tap system today without having to take the system down. And, you know, while in a kind of a classic environment, you know, we looked at HA and 5.9 sort of you know, availability. Those are really outdated concepts in a world where I really can't afford any downtime and I need to have a system that gives me that flexibility. That's where clustered introduced value on top of our data on tap.
I think that's helpful for people to understand. And yeah, I noticed at Insight, CDOT was the most popular abbreviation that everybody was using on the team. But, you know, again, just for those on the outside looking in, that's a helpful clarification.
Yeah, thanks for that.
As we go back and wrap up a little bit more on Flash, you know, you talked about the economics. There's clearly downward pricing pressure on SSDs and Flash in general, which is helpful for the whole industry to get more creative with pricing on those solutions. There's also a lot of new technology coming out. TLC in the Enterprise, which back in the early days of SLC Flash, I mean, nobody thought that the Enterprise would ever adopt TLC. And it seems like that may be a real thing. Some are offering it, but certainly next year at a capacity tier in storage, that starts to make some sense. We've got Intel and Micron talking about cross-point. When you talk to customers about Flash, how much do they get down in the weeds in those types of details? And do they ultimately care, or are they looking at the holistic solution from NetApp to make their buying determinations?
Yeah, I think, you know, the early adopter customers, you know, cared a lot. And they cared for all the right reasons, which there was some uncertainty about what we call the endurance of Flash, or how long, you know, would it last. And certainly as we move from SLC to that single layer cell to MLC, which is multi-layer or two, to triple layer cell or TLC, you know, for a lot of marketing people, they remembered that by saying it was some lousy cells, mostly lousy cells, and totally lousy cells, right? And the idea was, did you have elegant software that could overcome the imperfections of Flash? And, you know, the imperfections of Flash are that, you know, it degrades as you write to it. Unlike disk, which, you know, has its own issues, as you well know, right, which is kind of catastrophic, unpredictable failures. You know, Flash degrades in a relatively, you know, predictable manner based on the amount of data, times that you write to it. There was a lot of interest up front about, well, what does it mean? And is the vendor, are vendors protecting me so that I'm not going to lose data if I, you know, overwrite the Flash? This issue is largely overcome today, right? I mean, we've just extended warranties, for example, from 5 to 7 years so that, you know, you can really look and say that, you know, solid state reliability means that you may be keeping your Flash systems longer than you ever thought you would keep your disk systems. We've introduced something called a free controller upgrade program so that for customers that are on premium support at year 3 and they renew, they have the option of going to get a free controller upgrade. And, you know, when you think about that, there are IOPS that could be accessed perhaps by, you know, newer controller models. I mean, this could be a way to go and have basically a refresh, kind of a constant refresh without forklift upgrades over time that are changing the economics of how you invest and depreciate systems over time. So we're looking at these ways of making sure that Flash is easily consumable in the marketplace. And I think the issue that you want to be thinking about from a customer standpoint is, do you have an architecture that will allow you to take advantage of the latest consumer-grade Flash media? And I think that's really important to understand because, you know, the devices that are used in phones, for example, so, you know, 1/3 of the volume of, you know, Flash last quarter, which, by the way, was 19 exabytes of Flash delivered, 1/3 of that went into phones, 1/3 went into SSDs, and 1/3 went into USB and other types of devices. But, you know, the massive scale economies of consumer-grade Flash mean that, you know, it's elegant software like what we have at NetApp that allows you to take the cheapest, lowest, let's call it the lowest endurance Flash media, and then do what we've always done at NetApp, was we take basically, you know, commercial grade products, and then we make them enterprise reliable, performance, and then we add simple management. And, you know, when I say that, it was a long history that, you know, NetApp was the go and take x86 CPUs, for example, in place of custom RAID controllers. You know, so we have a long history of taking these general purpose semiconductor devices and then wrapping our elegant software around that to make it fast, reliable, and easy to manage.
Well, yeah, Intel, certainly when you talk about the controller upgrades, is making the adoption cycles more interesting, better, more powerful CPUs to continue to unlock the benefits of Flash. I mean, that's an exciting proposition for customers, I'm sure.
You also mentioned one interesting thing. I thought you mentioned like 3D Crosspoint, right? As new, new media types coming in, right? And that's an exciting one. We're excited about that. You know, this is an NVMe compliant PCIe based technology that offers even 1,000 times faster access times, presumably, right, than what we have on NAND flash today. And so, you know, NAND flash is 1,000 times faster than disk, but it's still 1,000 times slower than RAM. So, you know, new technologies like this, right, are really exciting and interesting about how you get faster access times yet still again, and even some increased density. You know, these technologies are ones that we are tightly integrated with the industry on, you know, and look forward to going to bringing into our product times. But based on really our assessment of the cost economics and the, you know, in storage, we always tend to take a little bit extra time, you know, that extra little bit just because it's your data. You know, that data, right, the protection of that data is a heavy responsibility. So, you know, you'll see us adopting these new timetable, these new technologies over a, an aggressive timetable, just like we were demonstrating integration with TLC NAND. This is the Samsung 3D NAND or VNAND at the Flash Memory Summit. And so demonstrating, right, that our cluster data on tap product with our AFF is easily integrated into these new technologies so that we can make sure our products are cost competitive over time.
Yeah, that's an interesting take. I know I spoke with a couple other guys at Insight from NetApp about what Flash does to the system from an architectural standpoint. So as we get faster and faster SSDs, faster storage controllers, more stuff's happening, more workload consolidation. Meanwhile, NetApp's adding more data services, more stuff to process, the meta tables are getting bigger. You know, you start to look at the where you weight the performance from the capacity to the RAM to the CPUs and keeping that balance. There's a lot of opportunity probably in that RAM area where all of that those data tables sit that, you know, you might not want to expand more and more RAM in the controllers. It's a big cost point. So perhaps Crosspoint or other more interesting ways of handling the data services becomes a bigger emphasis for you guys. Do you what do you think about that little bit going into the future?
Well, I think you look and think that the first application, right, of 3D Crosspoint is probably on the server side of the wire. Right. I mean, if you look and say, well, where might I go and take advantage of this? Right. I mean, that is, you know, where, you know, you can be right close to the application. So we're looking carefully at that, where I can go and take advantage of that low latency connection point, you know, on the server side of the wire. But it also has, you know, big ramifications, I think, for how clustered architectures work over time. Right, so the ability to have a clustered architecture is largely in part on is made possible by caching technologies into low latency caches. And so, you know, we've got a lot of technology, as you would imagine, right, around caching technology. So this becomes an area that's, you know, of high interest to our teams as we look at the ever unfolding change, right, of how as we reduce one bottleneck or relieve the pressure on one bottleneck, something opens up in another area, right? You know, if you think back on how Flash was deployed by hyperscalers, for example, you know, one of the things that Flash does architecturally is it unlocks, right, it allows CPUs to run at higher CPU utilization. You know, most enterprises today are running below 50% CPU utilization. And in part, the question is, well, why? Like, why aren't they running higher? If you look at hyperscalers, hyperscaler customers are running like at 90% CPU utilization. And the reason why is if you're buying 10,000 servers a month and you're only running at 30% CPU utilization, you're running three times more servers than you have to, which turns out to be a lot of rack space, power, cooling, right? So the efficiency in a hyperscaler world was around how do I get the most out of each server that I have, right, and compact this. Now, in the enterprise, the dynamic has been slightly different. But you may not have that many servers, and in any event, like consolidating a smaller number of servers may not mean as much to you. The difference in the enterprise is that you're paying for enterprise software licenses. And this is not immaterial, particularly as CPU speeds have gone up or number of cores, right? Most databases, for example, enterprise databases are licensed by core. And it's entirely possible to have, you know, $100,000 to $400,000 of database licenses running on a single server now. Flash gives you the opportunity to go and run those databases more efficiently to get more out of the CPUs that you already have. And so in many cases, you can pay for Flash by simply consolidating physical infrastructure in either databases or even virtualization licenses. And so this dynamic of how we go and kind of play catch up, if you will, right, from disks into, you know, a Moore's Law world where, you know, that Flash helps, it gives you a new opportunity to go and rebalance your data center. And we're just seeing enterprises now catch up with the idea that it's not just about the server CPU, it's about the licenses that run on those servers.
Yeah, we hear that a lot from enterprise customers, but I believe that they should take advantage of that arbitrage opportunity soon, because I'm confident that Oracle and others will find a way to rebalance the scales once they see what's going on here.
You bet.
They're really good at that. I know we're getting close to your table tennis time, so I want to make sure that we address a couple last things before you go.
You bet.
We put out a tweet yesterday, floated it out there to see what sort of input we could get from our followers to ask you a few questions. And there were a couple themes, so I'll loosely group a couple together. One of the questions we saw was from, and we talked a little bit about Object already, but really wanted to understand NetApp's take on Object Store and where they think that industry is going.
Yeah, a really interesting area, right? So, you know, if you look at where objects matter, right, it really comes out where you need the scale of the number of files that you might be looking at become so large that it's just unmanageable. You don't want to mount different file systems, for example. And thinking about a new way to go and look at objects and then be able to have a software-defined manner on where those objects are placed, right? This is our Storage Grid web scale product, right, where we have at least one customer with over a billion objects today managed through Storage Grid web scale. It's a really, it's an almost an automated archive backup device in some level, right, where you can start thinking about how do I go and locate devices. I mean, it doesn't have to be archive or backup, but I started thinking about where do I place data based on its last access time, for example, or based on the type of data that it is. And so Object gives you the ability to effectively raise up a level and manage, you know, at a level that, you know, you're talking about, you know, millions or, you know, up to, you know, billions of objects, as opposed to having to do that at a file level. The areas where we're seeing this and uptakes right now, so media and entertainment, a big one, right? The NAB show actually, you know, I think, took us all by surprise that, hey, look at the amount of media objects that need to be managed and how might I go do that right across a heterogeneous environment. Lots of interest there. Oil and gas, another one about, you know, how do I take many files and convert that and then have a management scheme that allows me to go between files and objects. So we're seeing those kinds of applications as being, you know, key drivers of the object initiative, as well as some pretty interesting federal opportunities.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's helpful. It's a dynamic space and one that I think there's a lot of interest in by the end user customers as they, you know, figure out what exactly is this thing and how best to leverage it in their environments.
It's another area of the data fabric, right, that says, you know, I want to go from files, blocks, objects. How do I go and you know, work with a company who can help me solve for all of these together, and do it within a common management scheme. And that's certainly the vision of the data fabric, is that we're pulling all these pieces together. And importantly, in storage, it's not just about the primary data. It's always been important to look at the efficiencies of any of your like snaps, clones, backups. And can you now move data that's effectively dehydrated, if you will, across dissimilar platforms? And, you know, the data fabric is actually based on a technical protocol. It's our logical replication with storage efficiencies. We call it LRSE. And this underlying protocol is a supported protocol that today allows us to share data with a consistent format, a very efficient transport, and a software-defined interface that is allowing us, like for the first time, right, to share data between our AltaVault product, for example, a caching device into the cloud, and dehydrated snapshots and clones from our cluster data on tap systems. It's that type of work, right, and the rich technical underpinnings that we have at NetApp that are making the data fabric real across files, blocks, and now objects.
That's great. Let's get one more in before we go and see how this works out. So this is a customer I talked to that buys into the idea of the data fabric concept from NetApp and wants to explore the cloud. We talked a lot about the cloud at the beginning of the podcast, but his concerns are not so much related to anything other than reliability. He's got a dedicated stack in his data center. He gets 5 or 6 nines, depending on what it is, but he's worried that the cloud won't give him the 5 nines that he's used to. What are you telling customers that are concerned about that more than latency, more than anything else? What do you talk about there?
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the cloud and how you think about what you're doing with the cloud I tend to think in threes, right? So I've got kind of three ways that I talk to customers. One is that you want to match if you're thinking about what you're doing versus not doing, you want to first off look and say, well, how am I matching the flexibility of what the cloud offers? That's actually the first element. Because the number one reason to put something into the cloud is not cost and it's not quality of service or things like that. It's how easy is it to go do, and can I do that with fewer people or less management? So if you're looking at the flexibility, right, I think that's a key element to start with. The second one is to say, I want to make sure that the things I invest in are going to be somehow like materially different than what I get from the cloud. And what you have in the cloud today, with these loosely federated architectures, you can buy IOPS, but to guarantee when they're delivered on any sort of QoS, right, becomes expensive in a hurry if you can get it at all. And so the way I look at this is that Flash becomes even more interesting on an on-prem investment profile, because the applications that you want to hold on to are ones where you'll be differentiating on performance. And if they're not those types of applications, well, those are things that you might want to consider as more appropriate into the cloud. So there's a performance element here to think about. And I think this idea of the third element is now thinking about how I move data back and forth between clouds and on-prem gear. And that right now starts to look a little bit about both the gravity of data, right? So there's a lot of people talking about data gravity and how hard it is to move. We're talking about data being weightless and how the data fabric makes data weightless. That I actually care a little bit less now about where that data is. I'll give you a good example, because I don't think I answered your question directly on the reliability aspect. One thing that we've been encouraging customers, and actually customers started encouraging us, was we have a product called NetApp Private Storage, where what customers looked at is they had NetApp storage and they wanted to own their own data. So for sovereignty purposes or performance, I'll keep my storage data, but I want to have a low latency connection into server or compute in the cloud. And so you could basically burst into the cloud for workloads that, you know, for the server compute aspects, but I'm going to go and maintain my own storage. And so we, you know, the first element of that was just, hey, I'm going to go and be able to run a high performance application. I can spin up servers, spin them down. I've got the ultimate burst into the cloud on compute, and I haven't given up any control over my own data. That was kind of interesting. That quickly moved into, well, maybe that's a new DR model. Maybe the new DR model says, you know, the ultimate case, you know, DR is the ultimate case where I might want to own my primary servers and storage, but when I go and have an event, maybe what I have is I'm DR protecting my storage as I always did with, you know, another site copy, right, owned and protected by me. But those servers are ones that I only want to spin up in the case that I have an event or that I want to test. And so I've got this, you know, new model where I could say I'm going to have DR that's not a uniform, homogeneous, I own everything in two locations, but now I've got the ability to say I'm going to go and protect my data one way, and I'll tap into those servers and rent those because that's the ultimate case where I'd like to go and have rentable servers. Now I've solved for the flexibility of the cloud, and I've maintained the reliability of my own data, right, in a system that I, you know, have grown up to trust and rely on.
Well, it's a flexible solution, it sounds like. I know it's one that your guys were really excited about at Insight and delivering on customer needs and trying to get to some of those core concerns about where the data is and how I can access it. Well, we've taken up a great deal of your time, and I'm afraid we could go for another hour, Lee, if we keep this up. So we should probably stop now while we're ahead. Certainly appreciate your time and look forward to talking to you again soon.
It's always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
I want to thank Lee again for participating in our very first podcast. It was great to have him on to get NetApp updates on cloud, flash, and everything else they're working on. We also want to thank OCZ Enterprise for supporting the podcast. You can find them at OCZEnterprise.com. And get updated on their latest NVMe solutions. They also have a wide variety of other form factors and interfaces, so check them out as well. We want to hear from you, so find us on Twitter, at Storage Review. If you want to follow Kevin and learn about the things going on in the test lab and what he's working on, you can find him at Test Lab Nut. I'm at BMBEELER. And we'll keep working and take your feedback into consideration and try to make the podcast and the content as good as we can. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time.